This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
This is your world. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
Right, welcome back to the show. The time now, 7:35 on this Youth Day edition of Power Business. My name is Nosi Pogatebe, standing in for Noluthando Mthunti Mlambo. She'll be back with you again tomorrow evening. But let's shift focus now to this topic, our roundtable on the good, the bad, and the ugly, the challenges and triumphs of being a young entrepreneur. So starting a business is an exhilarating adventure full of opportunities to innovate, disrupt, and make a mark on the world. However, for any entrepreneur, this journey comes with its unique set of challenges and triumphs. In this segment, we'll dive deep into the realities of youth entrepreneurship, exploring the highs and lows experienced by those brave enough to forge their own paths. And are joining us to share their journeys to achieving entrepreneurial success. In studio, I'm joined by Sibu Mabena, the founder of marketing and PR agency Duma Collective, and Lebo Pule, the co-founder of Nungu Diamonds. A very good evening and welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us.
Happy Youth Day.
Yes, happy Youth Day to you too.
I think I'm cheating this one a bit.
I don't quite qualify as youth anymore.
How old are you?
But it's okay. I'm 37 this year.
You'll qualify today. Don't worry about it. Semantics.
I like that.
All right, so let's get into it. So I'll start with you, Sibu. What prompted you to start your own business as opposed to sticking to the 9-to-5 rule?
Well, it really was a natural progression. I was running a high-level freelancing operation, like doing 5, 6, 7 jobs at a time. And I actually had an assistant, right? So I presented myself as someone who was kind of not a freelancer, but not a business and somewhere in between.
Okay.
So at some point, I registered a company just for the sake of being able to invoice as a professional and for tax purposes, because you get taxed higher as a freelancer than you do as a business or someone who's earning a salary within your business. So I registered a company in 2014 and then registered another one in 2017 in order to rebrand and kind of become a household name with the name Duma Collective. Mm-hmm. But it really went from me just taking my passions, realizing that they're able to make a profit for me, and then formalizing that into a business so that I could present myself as a company that could be seen as formidable. And the agency went from one person to two and two to 49 today. So we've got 49 young creatives who are super passionate about what they do. And we have really great FMCG clients, government clients, corporates who we work with on a company to company basis. All of that coming from my passions being turned into a profit. So yeah.
Wow, lovely journey. And what about you, Lebo? What has been your journey?
How do you follow after that?
But can you tell us about your diamond story?
Mine is slightly simpler than that, I think. I started off in varsity. Somebody told me about diamonds. I was just about to finish my law degree at the time and started doing a bit of research into the space. What is it all about? And I was fortunate to come across a guy who mentored me in the diamond business at the time, living in Mafeking. I moved to Johannesburg. The guy took me under his wing, mm-hmm. taught me everything I got to learn, where to get your license, who to buy from, how to value diamonds, and. In 2013, started my own business called Nungu Diamonds Today. We were mainly in the diamond business, we call it that. So we buy rough diamonds, we cut and polish them, we sell them locally and internationally, and pivoted into the retail diamond bespoke space in 2017. So for me, it started off as just curiosity, to be honest with you. I knew I didn't want to practice law. My parents were insisting, but I knew I wanted to do something more interesting. Mm. And diamonds being such a huge, you know, there's this negative narrative about diamonds and black people and in Africa and all of that. I feel like I'm somewhat an activist of sorts, you know. I'm out to tell a different story about diamonds, and that's what Nungu Diamonds is all about today.
That is definitely an interesting story, and I feel like I need to probably be more curious in life.
Oh, yeah, it gets you into trouble also, just okay. So you know.
Sounds like good trouble though from your side.
Yeah, you know how they say curiosity killed the cat, yeah. But on the other hand, cats have 9 lives, yeah.
Oh,
so awesome. I mean, there's a rebuttal to every.
I'm on my 5th.
Yeah, you're on your 5th life. Wait, I'm curious. Did you finish your law degree?
I did. I did finish my law degree. I did my articles for like 3 months, and I had to do this one consultation with these guys. They were held in some holding cell in Kempton Park.
Okay.
I walked in there and I just knew it wasn't for me.
Oh my God.
So you were in criminal law?
I was. So when you serve your articles, I guess you have to do everything. So you're dealing with people in, you know, who were divorcing, people that had smuggled drugs into the country. It was a weird experience for me.
Uh-huh.
And I decided then that, you know, pursuing the world of, we say my wife and I like to say we're in the happiness business.
Mm.
You know, we consult with couples that are looking to spend the rest of their lives together, want to celebrate happy moments, and, you know, seeing that experience for me is much better than honestly going to court and trying to get somebody off on something crazy.
Until those couples divorce.
Yeah, I have more questions about those diamonds.
They don't call me when that happens.
Except someone did. Funny enough, you know, someone did to do a celebration.
Absolutely.
Of a separation. And, but, you know, you were able to really do a cool thing about it.
Even then, it was a celebration, please God.
All right. Let's rein it in. Okay. Yes, so now, Sibu, back to you. Now, let's reflect on the early days. Talk to us about some of the challenges that you encountered.
Wow. It's been many, many, many days of doing this. I mean, since 2014, if you multiply that by 365 days, you know, there's quite a lot of anecdotes we can share with people. But I think the more important ones when it comes to business and formulating your operation into something that people can respect, especially in the market. Pricing was a very big challenge for me because in the beginning, you know, when clients would ask, so what's your rate card? And I'd say, hey, my rate is your budget. Because at that time, you really don't have much of a rap sheet to be able to present to clients to qualify why you charge what you charge.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really trying to fight for some kind of share of the pie and being able to present ourselves to clients as people who are affordable, but are good and are willing to work, and transforming that affordability or relatively affordable into being paid what we actually deserve has been quite a tough conversation to have with people, to say, guys, yeah, what you were paying yesterday can't be what you're paying today.
I mean, the price just went up.
I just got back from Harvard. Come on.
Yeah. I feel like we need those, you know, those sound effects.
Wrong radio station, my dear. No, but it really is just to make the market understand that, guys, at the end of the day, the work you're asking us to do costs money.
Mm.
It costs time, or it costs money for people to spend time doing the work you want. It costs money for us to get the resources to be able to deliver on what you want. In fact, even when we negotiate our contracts, trying to work in a yearly increase, you know, procurement in some companies really grapples with that, to say a yearly increase, but why when we're giving you a 3-year contract? Say, so there's inflation, you know, costs go up every single year, things change. So there's that one challenge. Two, I suppose recruiting, recruiting, where it's a chicken and egg situation. What comes first, the people or the money? So being able to do that with very little capital and converting the capital into enough money to be able to recruit the right talent in order to pay them the right amount of money and then do the work. So I started out by recruiting people who weren't necessarily the most skilled or experienced in that role, but I still appreciate them today so much for getting Duma Collective to a place where today we can get people who are experienced enough at the cost that they come at. That's a second one. Thirdly, I think removing me as the founder from being the face of the business, where, you know, for a lot of times I say it's not the Sibu Collective, it's Duma Collective, where we come as 49. I may stand as one sometimes, but we actually come as 49, and you won't always get Sibu Mabena coming into the boardroom. Sometimes it's Sislindi, sometimes it's Azande, sometimes it's Justine, Katso, etc. That it is a company and no longer me. So kind of rebranding it from being an individual founder-led organization to it being an agency that has a name that is not the founder's name. So, yeah, it's those three.
Yeah, very difficult, you know, difficult conversations, but good ones to have, or necessary ones to have, rather. And Lebo, on your side, what have been some of the challenges in the beginning for you?
breaking into the diamond business was a complicated story. I mean, it's not an industry that is known for having a lot of black participation. It's a very globalized industry. You have to spend your 10,000 hours, like how they say, first before people can even look at you twice. So we had to do a lot of extensive traveling around the world to learn where these diamonds end up. They're not consumed in South Africa. In Africa, most of them are mined here. Some of them are cut and polished here, and then they go elsewhere. Mm. So we had to first understand. So what does the value chain look like? You know, who do you buy from? How do you become a client at De Beers, which is another story altogether. Mm. The diamond industry is also very capital intensive. You know, you can't come in and not have the buck to back it up. There's no point in being in the diamond business if you can't buy the diamonds to sell them. So what we had to do is build a very strong network of partners to work with initially to help us get to where we had to get so that we can have diamonds on the table to present to would-be clients. And I think what was more important was, you know, learning the business acumen that has to back any entrepreneur. You know, sometimes we over-exaggerate everything else apart from saying, how important is it to be put together well enough as an entrepreneur? What do you need to know? Your management accounts, your balance sheet. Do you know how to read that? Mm. Do you know how to manage your cash flow? Can you plan ahead? We're not even talking about how do you build a brand. We're just talking about, do you understand those inner workings of what puts together an entrepreneur? So I was fortunate to also have the opportunity to go to a business development school that taught me all of that. And it's been an interesting 12 to 13 years, I think. And the challenges continue to, I mean, there's no such a time where you don't have any challenges anymore. Fortunately, today we're set up in a way that we can manage most of them.
Mm. All right. Back to you, Sibu. So, you know, outside of the challenges, what are some of the mistakes or the biggest mistakes that you've made as an entrepreneur?
What a very difficult question for me, because okay. I don't know about... I haven't registered a lot of the things that have happened as mistakes so much as I have as missteps, maybe.
Yeah.
And I would say maybe, you know, on contracts, not having the right or spending enough time interrogating a contract, and then down the road, it gets us into a little bit of hot water. Mm. But because, shame, we have really good lawyer friends that were able to help us out, you know, it wasn't such a grave mistake. Maybe also working with the wrong people, hiring on desperation has happened, you know, where you're like, oh, I have a need. I just need someone to come and do this thing. And then you actually don't do the due diligence to assess if this person is the right person for the job. We have also, hunger economics can also come into the conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking with your stomach, where you say yes to jobs purely because you need money at that time.
Sure.
And then you see down the road, actually I wasn't able to deliver on the job, or the job cost us too much.
Mm.
And then it actually isn't worth our while. And we end up being investors in this job and we're not actually getting a profit from it. So it's missteps that we've learned from very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say there's been that one grave mistake that has landed us in hot water and I thought I'd close the business. No.
But hunger economics, that's a difficult one, especially for young people in this high unemployment rate that we have, especially for young people. What would be the advice then there?
It's such a difficult one. And I have to honestly speak as someone who has gone through it and, so to speak, sits on a high horse.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. It's hard for people to take advice from me without acknowledging that, guys, I've gone through so many different things,
mm-hmm.
that what I say now comes from the fact that I've gone through them. So sure. I'm not cognizant of the fact that people's situations are very different right now, especially considering I started in 2014, which is many, many, many years ago, where a lot of things are different to how they are right now. Right now, things are so much more expensive. Right now, the disparity between the lower income households and the middle class and the super rich, the gap has widened incredibly.
Mm.
Right now, there are more people doing the same thing. So the competition is higher. So I would say, I think the opportunity I see for young people right now is to do as many things as you can,
mm-hmm.
with the 24 hours a day that you have, also looking at the people who are around you, who can help you, who you can collaborate with. By that, I mean, for example, transportation. You know, if you need to get from point A to point B, let's say you are good at social media. Ubaba wase next door has a van that he can use to do deliveries for people. When do social media marketing for Ubaba wase next door in exchange for him to get you from point A to point B, right? You didn't spend money. He didn't spend money, but both of you are getting something from each other that's going to help each other. So it's to say, utilize your network a little bit more than what we do right now. People don't talk about their problems. People don't talk about the issues that they have and the help that they need. And if we were to speak more, I'm sure there's a solution in your community to help you get from A to B. So I think that's my very long-winded way of saying, sonke, ay sonke, abantu abaningi balambile, but abantu abaningi have enough resources to share with each other in order to get that hunger to a stage of profit.
Yeah, I like that. Looking for the gaps, always looking out for something. But Lebo, on your side, what have been some of the mistakes or, you know, those missteps that you've learned from?
I think I agree a lot with what you're saying. You know, it all the experiences we've had have led to where we are today. You know, so we've come to learn quite a bit. I would say if I had to look for a specific mistake, I would say there's an instance where I've bought rough diamonds. The view was to make a certain amount of money out of them. I ended up making a lot less. But you go in again. Mm. It's business. You make mistakes. And from what you learn, you then improve moving forward. And that's more of the technical bit of, you know, how a diamond is bought. There's certain things I didn't consider. I was a bit new at the time. And technically, I wasn't as sound as I am now. But it doesn't stop you, right? I think one of the best things to do is just keep putting, you know, one foot in front of the other. And like how you're saying now, you know, widen your network. Make sure that you have people to call and say, hey, this is something I've done. How can I correct? How can I improve? And make sure that you never rest. You know, I tell people this all the time. So I play tennis for fun. I've become quite decent in the past year. My coach insists that I tell people that. But what you learn from tennis is whether you hit a good shot or a bad shot, you have to hit the next one.
Mm.
The next one is coming. So don't be so fixated on whether you won now or lost now. Just keep going, right? For all you know, the next shot is the best shot you'll hit. But even if it is, you know, keep moving. So to your point, use what you have and best utilize.
I like that. Some key lessons there for young people. But let's just focus just a little bit. So Sibu, what has been your approach to making a good business deal?
Oh, wow. Oh, these questions are deep. Look, it's been one. Do we know enough about what we're being asked to do? One. Then the answer to that tells us, do we need to get more information about the thing we need to do? And then three, the answer to that tells us who we need to bring on board to help us with what we don't know. And I think with that, that kind of just deep knowledge of the project we are asked to take on, costing it correctly, and then negotiating from the standpoint of, we are here to offer value, and you have come to the right place. Then we find ourselves in a situation where the value exchange is correct. We are happy to do the work. The client is excited about what we're offering. And then we all go to war together and we win. So that's the approach to business deals. And because our business deals are that of, client briefs us, we do the work, people get paid, and there's success.
Yes.
So I think that's been my approach.
All right. Business is different for you, Lebo. What's been your approach?
I have a very strong network of experienced people that I touch base with all the time when it comes to any sort of deal I enter into. Is it an attorney? Is it my PR lady who's incredibly capable? Is it my wife? Is it other partners in different capacities? So I think there's no formula. You know, you can have a conversation and you can feel a deal is decent and go head first, and it doesn't work out. Sometimes these type of things happen. But what you want to say is, before you go in, have you had the right conversations? Have you asked the right questions? And if you have, and it still doesn't work out, there are learnings to take away from that.
All right. Okay. So, again, back to you now, Sibu. What are some of the, you know, common misconceptions about being an entrepreneur that you've learned are not true?
That we have lots of money.
You don't?
Yes. Yes.
Not all entrepreneurs have money?
No, not all of us. Please, it's really, you know, I've always said, guys, my business's money is not my money.
Mm.
Because the money that the business has is often there to fund the projects that our clients have briefed us on or have entrusted us with. We pay salaries every month. We pay taxes every month. We've got overheads every month. And, you know, I suppose it's just for me that I can speak like this, that I thought, wow, business people go to meetings every day. And then at the end of the month, there's lots of money.
Yes.
And that was so untrue, because in going to meetings, they're still doing the work. They're still being on site. They're still, you know, actually doing research. There's ideating. There's so much that goes into running a business that it's not just about going to meetings. Also, sometimes you're not going to get paid what you deserve for a while, until such a time as you've built up the reserves to be able to sustainably, as the founder of the business, pay yourself that which is due to you. Also, I think because my dad was an entrepreneur,
sure,
and then my sister went into entrepreneurship, where my mother was a 9-to-5er and my brother is a 9-to-5er.
Sure.
So looking at these people around me, it's such a balance, right? To say, okay, law, 9-to-5, diligently, every end of the month gets their salary. Mm. Where my father or my sister, if they don't work, they don't get paid. So that understanding, I think, did sober me.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I did think, I'm going to make so much money being an entrepreneur, making profit out of my passion. Plus, I love going to work. Mm. And wow, what a dream, my dear. Things are getting better. They're getting better. They're improving,
yes,
with the more work we get in and the more we're able to do and grow as a business. But I don't want people to think that you will become an overnight success.
Mm.
Yeah.
Just because you have a great idea. No.
Yeah. But that's a difficult one, deciding when, okay, now we're not going to take work because we need it, but now we're going to change the price and this is what we're going to do, because it costs money to take people to meetings. It costs money to do this work. When did you decide then, okay, this we're no longer doing?
So I was running a spaza shop. So I went from high-level freelancing operation,
sure,
to a really professional spaza shop, right? And then at some point, I decided, you know what, I can't keep going being a creative that has become a business person, trying to turn this business into a formidable agency without bringing in the right expertise to help me transform it into an agency. So in 2020, I hired a lady called Lindiwe Maduna to come in and be the GM of the company, because she's got 20 years of agency experience, having worked on everything from McCann to VML and a couple of agencies in between. And what she brought to the table was incredible experience, incredible smarts, and respect from the industry. As soon as I was able to announce to my clients that we've got Lindiwe Maduna as our GM, the tone changed, because now they know that, okay, we actually can't play with this girl anymore. Mm. She's now got someone who knows what is cutting. At some point, I actually hired her in and was paying her more than I was paying myself, because I realized how much I actually need her. And it was fair to pay her more than I was paying myself, because she comes with that experience that I have to match her salary with that she was getting from where she was. Mm. So it's making a decision to say, I'm going to sacrifice for myself a little bit so that we can get the business to where it needs to be. And the rewards, I will see the rewards for that sacrifice down the line.
Mm.
So at that point in 2020, I think it was around October-ish, May-ish, something like that, Sis Lindy's joining of the company is what really switched us from being a spaza shop to a professional company, being able to price correctly, being able to be competitive in the industry, looking at what other agencies are charging, being able to correct pricing from a salary perspective to say, oh my God, I was paying people on affordability and what they were willing to accept, but that's actually not the right fee that I should be paying them. I should standardize according to what's happening in industry. And from there, I got an advisory board, two guys, an M&A specialist and a CA. And the two of them were able to come in and also fix the books and fix the money. All the stuff that he was talking about knowing your financials and having them be, you know, proper, because when someone asks you, you've got to have a pack to deliver on. I didn't know what to do, and they came in and they helped me. So it really was at the point where the right professional help was able to come in and fix us that we were able to then go to market and say, okay, iskatsoklalas peli lemanj. Here are the fees.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Lebo, I'm so sorry to do this to you, but we've run out of time. So just quickly from you then, what are some of the misconceptions that you've learned are not true?
I echo the same sentiment to say it's not about money. Mm. There's no such thing as entrepreneurs make loads and loads of money. At some point, you get to make money, for sure. But it's a journey, and one that you have to commit to, and not just commit, you know, mentally too. I mean, you have to be ready to take on some of the complicated challenges that come with running a business, and be patient with yourself. Be patient with yourself. At some point, the money comes. I promise.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
Lovely.
I'm not saying I have it. I'm just saying I promise.
You know it's coming. All right. On that note, then we'll leave it there with our guests Sibu Mabena and Lebo Pule talking to us in the roundtable about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the challenges and triumphs of being a young entrepreneur. I know I've learned a lot, and I hope you two at home have also learned something from this conversation. But right now, that's it for the show. Thank you so much to the.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.